You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you're listening to podcasts to get the latest episodes. It's Wednesday evening, right after the Miami Heat lost by 2 points to the Boston Celtics. And I do want to recap that game. And I know, first and foremost, I thank everybody who's listening to this podcast because it is a very strange and terrible day. That's probably a wild understatement, watching the events transpire in Washington, D.C. and around the world and here in the United States in particular. So if you're listening to the show, thank you for taking the time, for wanting to hear something, I guess, to provide a distraction here. We were supposed to prepare a little statement, perhaps, or deliver some lines that had been written for us about, you know, welcoming you to the show and things of that sort. But that's never really been my speed. And I did want to talk a little bit about what's going on because, well, you're here. And I feel like it's important to talk about. Now, if you've listened to this show at all over the past year, you know that I'm not necessarily one to shut up and dribble. I think that's the appropriate phrase here. I'll express myself when necessary about something that I feel strongly about, whether it's a particular player or the social justice movement or trying to establish any sense of equality in a country that has been largely formed on racist principles that have ended the lives of thousands of human beings who were treated as less than human for really stupid reasons. And today in particular, while the situation in Washington, D.C. is largely a political one, one of the things that really stands out to me is trying to make the comparison to protests that took place last year over the deaths of black men and women, and understanding that some spoiled, rich child's idiot of a president inciting a crowd to act violently against buildings and government monuments and things of that sort, which to me, some of them need to be taken down. The Capitol building was just a building and nobody was hurt in the process. People broke in. They should all be arrested. They should all be dealt with punitively, but nobody was hurt. Those protests from last year were because people were frustrated and fed up with decades and decades of racism, of treating people's lives as meaningless. A completely different rationale, a motivation to protest. This isn't, you know, brainwashing of the highest order to support your child president. What happened last year was to express frustration and anger at countless victims of racism and police brutality. That's not this. And there were some really terrible images of today. Again, not to the same order, but people are comparing like the looting of a Target or something like that to, you know, breaking into a Capitol building. Again, apples to really shitty oranges as far as a comparison goes. And as far as police activity, gently escorting protesters out of the building, one woman making the rounds for being maced in the face and expressing shock and dismay for being maced in the face after breaking into a building and expressing that, you know, there's a revolution coming. Well, I don't know if the revolution is being led by such idiots as she and the others like her, then it's probably going to be quashed pretty quickly. But either way, the way that the police interacted with those people, mostly white police, mostly white protesters, if not completely white protesters, and the sharp contrast to people of color protesting last year and how they were treated by police. Well, I think that says just a lot about what's going on in this country and what's been going on for decades. So, back to the show. I guess, you know, I want to express my opinion about it. I want to say something. If you're comfortable listening to this show and if you want to talk about basketball, judging from the interaction on Twitter and the kind of response people were getting, I think there's a lot of, not necessarily apathy, but it's hard to really just want to watch a game. I'm talked to a number of other hosts from around the network, and there were concerns. Some people just didn't feel right doing so. There was a game today, and you know, I thought maybe it would be important to talk about it if you were interested in that sort of thing, and also because it gave me an opportunity to voice my own concerns about the subject. So the Miami Heat released a statement, one that they shared in along with the Boston Celtics, their opponent tonight. There was some talk about perhaps canceling the game outright. Michelle Roberts, the president of the National Basketball Players Association, did not ever at any point confirm that games were going to be canceled. I'm sure players understood that that was something worth considering. They took a knee before the game during the national anthem, of course, with the exception of Myers Leonard. As far as other teams around the league, I think Milwaukee and their opponent, I can't recall now who it was, tipped the ball and then knelt. Perhaps a little stronger show of resilience and wanting to do something differently. I don't know if the team is going to continue to kneel during the anthem moving forward. It's a statement. It does provoke some people rather stupidly, in my opinion. I also think it's if that's how they feel comfortable protesting quietly and proudly, then that's fine with me too. But the statement from the Miami Heat, I think, is a good one and worth repeating here. This is as follows. 2021 is a new year, but some things have not changed. We play tonight's game with a heavy heart after yesterday's decision in Kenosha, and knowing that protesters in our nation's capital are treated differently by political leaders depending on what side of certain issues they are on. The drastic difference between the way protesters this past spring and summer were treated and the encouragement given today's protesters who acted illegally just shows how much more work we have to do. We have decided to play tonight's game to try to bring joy into people's lives, but we must not forget the injustices in our society, and we will continue to use our voices and our platform to highlight these issues and to do everything we can to work for a more equal and just America. Hashtag Black Lives Still Matter. Important inclusion, that last hashtag there. Yes, just for social media purposes, but good to know that this organization has their eye focused on what's bigger here, that the protests taking place aren't just about, you know, counting votes or, you know, who sits in the Oval Office right now and who won't sit there for much longer. And kudos to Eric Spoelstra and Brad Stevens and players who all made statements about what's going on and how important it was to continue to support movements like this in the future, because it's a, well, I mean, if you don't understand why it's important at this point, then there's probably no sake in trying to go into it on the show. But I will recap the episode. I will also talk a little bit more about what's going on with Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, who unfortunately further aggravated an injury to his ankle against the Celtics, but then wound up responding with his best game of the season. You're listening to Locked On Heat. There's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust as a network. That's betonline.ag. If you sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag, use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. The NBA is, of course, kicking off. NFL playoff games will be starting soon. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. If you want to make a little money, get on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. It's January. It's important to set the tone for the new year. And in 2021, that has never been more true. Luckily, our good friends at CBDMD are here to give you the support you need to conquer your New Year's resolutions and make this year your best one yet. And if those resolutions happen to involve fitness, they've got a brand new topical product that'll help keep you moving all year long. CBD Relief with lidocaine fuses CBDMD's hybrid broad-spectrum formula with fast-acting lidocaine to help provide temporary relief for minor aches and pain. And with a new bag-on-valve spray technology, Relief can be applied comfortably at any angle, even upside down. And to make it even easier to get the year started off right, they're offering all our listeners 20% off your next order when you use a promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's cbdmd.com and use a promo code NBA for 20% off your purchase at Superior CBD Products from CBDMD. So back to back. basketball, an actual game being played on Wednesday night here at the America Airlines Arena. The Boston Celtics at 5-3, taking on the 3-3 Miami Heat. Kelly Olynyk back in the starting lineup again for the second consecutive game, and he struggled at first. Wasn't really hitting much of his shots. Looked like he was being exposed defensively a little bit. He was switching everything. It seemed like Miami, their defensive principles weren't necessarily to go to the zone so much as it was to just switch as much as possible, similar to what they did in the Orlando bubble. I think it was somewhat effective. It seemed like they were challenging shots. At the same time, they gave up as many threes as possible. Something that they've been doing a lot all season is seems like they've been giving up a lot of good quality looks there and preventing teams from getting to the rim and hitting at a high rate at the rim, but at the same time giving up, unfortunately, a number of shots. And with shooters like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who looks like he's going to be a really great player for the Celtics, it was not exactly the best strategy. So Miami found themselves in a deficit a little early on. In the third quarter, they were actually down by as many as 17 points, but then stormed back to reclaim a lead of their own. They actually wound up having a really strong third quarter offensively, outscoring the Celtics by 8, and then wound up taking a pretty commanding lead of their own. And then in the fourth quarter, Boston just started to hit a couple of shots. They got a couple of key looks. They started getting some calls going their way, wound up blowing out Miami 105-95. And then it looked like it was going to be a complete end to the game. And Duncan Robinson just immediately took over, connected on a three-point shot with 109 left in the game to keep the score at 105-98. Then hit 130 seconds later and collected the foul as well. So it brought the game down to 105-102, so a three-point deficit at that point. And then a Bam Adebayo block on a Marcus Smart shot led to a Goran Dragic three after he had missed a shot earlier, collected the rebound, and then hit the shot again to tie the game with 13 seconds left. And then in the waning moments of the game, with 0.2 seconds left in the game, Peyton Pritchard grabbed an offensive rebound on a Marcus Smart layup, wasn't boxed out. A lot of people blaming Tyler Hero for that. And then Pritchard winds up putting up the shot, ending it in Boston's favor again. Then they go on to 6-3. And Miami drops below 500 again to a record of 3-4. So Olynyk, solid, I think, overall. He had a nice stretch there in the third quarter when Miami was picking up steam offensively, where he was hitting a couple shots. He had a nice step back fadeaway, three-pointer. It looked like he was in rhythm, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 6 from three-point range. I was worried it was going to be the inconsistent Kelly Knight. Wound up not playing in the fourth quarter. Eric Spoelstra should take the blame here. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like blaming Spo very much, but he went with a strange and curious lineup in the fourth quarter when Miami's offense just went dead and Duncan Robinson wasn't in the game. They had Andre Iguodala out there. I think it might have cost Miami the win. If not for Duncan's insertion, again, with a minute left in the game, Miami might have been blown out. So I'm not sure what Spo saw there. I'm not sure why he went with Iguodala. I know there's a lot of trust there in Iguodala, able to cut, you know, either help defend at a high level or at least be able to hit big shots or make winning plays. Iguodala looked like he was going to have his shot dialed up. In fact, he did go 3 of 5 from the field for 9 points in total. But he just wasn't knocking down his shot towards the end there. He wasn't looking for his opportunities. Duncan went in there immediately looking to score and wound up putting up some big shots in order to make this game a much more playable one, a much more decent-sized deficit for Miami. And look, Adebayo wound up having a pretty solid game too. 15 points overall, 5 of 10 from the field. Not necessarily aggressive, but I think he did a fine job defensively, trying to do everything he possibly could. Jimmy Butler, to me, was probably the story of the game, unfortunately, because he did wind up driving to the rim and stepping on Marcus Smart's foot and rolling his ankle. And then from that point, just seemed to get even better. There was a different version of Jimmy, similarly to what we had seen in the Orlando bubble, where he was just more aggressive, getting to the line, 9 free throw attempts, going 8 of 9 overall. So this was much more akin to what we had seen last year. 6 of 6 the game before, 8 of 9 now, so perhaps a restoration of more aggressive Jimmy getting to the line, looking for that free throws. because it was such a big part of his offense, of his shots not falling. Unfortunately, he took three three-pointers, still not able to connect on those, so not quite like the Orlando bubble. 9 of 19 overall from the field, but if you take away those three three-pointers, which isn't the strength of Jimmy's game, probably won't be 9 of 16, so maybe that's a positive way of looking at it. Also finished with 8 rebounds and 3 assists, 3 blocks as well, so this was a good defensive game for him. And also, you know, a more aggressive one. You can tell by the number of assists, he wasn't really looking to get everybody else going. This was more about him trying to do whatever was possible. He looked like he was angry and engaged. Finished with 26 points. A pretty solid overall night from him. Goran Dragic, unfortunately, struggled a little bit from the field. 5 of 12 overall for just 14 points. 1 of 5 from the field. A couple of those shots fall the way they have so often for Goran this season. And this is a very different game. And I don't think it was about Boston's defense. They are a very good defensive team, but this to me was more about just Miami missing some wide open looks there. And I'm not sure if there was a distraction factor. They all talked about it after the game. Eric Spoelstra and the players that spoke to media mentioned the difficulty of wanting to play, about focusing on playing, and whether or not it was a distraction. Of course, they denied that, but they're human. It has to be somewhat of a distraction. You're not aware. You know, you're aware of what's going on. Eric Spoelstra pregame talked about everybody watching it in the training room. So there you are, thinking about basketball, trying to get to work, and you're seeing what's happening in the nation's capital. And, of course, it's going to be somewhat of an issue. It may cloud your focus to some extent. And maybe that's why Miami started off looking a little hazy, a little lost. But they wound up getting it together later on. So they found their footing. They made it a much more even game. They played really well in the second half. I don't feel too bad about this game because, again, it was a much closer effort, and they did show some effort. I thought at first, you know, judging by my Boston 17-point lead, I thought it was going to turn into a blowout the way we have seen so often. This was more, again, like Miami basketball. Now, they had a strong game against Oklahoma City on Monday. On Wednesday, even though they didn't win, they showed toughness. They showed some grit, some resilience there. I have to say, I'm not so opposed to annoyed by the final score here. I think it wound up being a fairly decent game overall for the Heat. I don't have too much else to take away here. I think Miami, again, there were some issues here. I think they're kind of not necessarily frustrated, not to the sense where you're going to see any kind of blowups in the locker room or anything like that. It's not about the camaraderie issue. I think they recognize that they're not playing as well as they'd like to, and there's another level for them to reach. I'm not sure if it's because they're comparing themselves to that run last year, but they also know they can play better. Again, Boston's a really good team, and for Miami to be able to hold their own on a night like tonight, you got to give them credit for it. But I like also the fact that they're showing some self-awareness there, that they have to play better. And it's worth noting that, you know, to a man, they all spoke about not being content, that they're not being complacent with last year's success, that they know that they're going to be taking on teams that are going to be looking to challenge them because they are the Eastern Conference finalists, the Eastern Conference winners from last season. And I think for a team like Boston that was summarily, kicked out of the playoffs last year, I think they're still holding a somewhat of a grudge there. So this team is going to be facing Miami again next week on Sunday. Miami will be traveling to Washington on Saturday, and taking on the Wizards there. The Wizards, they actually had a pretty big game themselves. They wound up losing, but 60 points from Bradley Beal tonight. So that's kicked off a lot of conversation about whether or not they should be looking to acquire Bradley Beal or James Harden, or whether or not Miami's in a bad place. I don't think they're in a bad place. I don't think they're in a great place. But I think that they are going to be able to figure it out. This is not as dire as it might seem. Right now, their record isn't great. I thought they would get off to a lot better of a start this season. Maybe injury issues won't be a problem later on. They've already lost 2.5 games to Jimmy, and it seems like he's going to continue to tweak that ankle. I'm not sure how much more of a recurring theme it'll be. For him, he spoke afterwards. He said, look, he's not worried about it. It's fine. He'll get treatment on it. He'll be okay. He'll be good to go on Saturday against the Wizards. So we'll have to continue to monitor that situation. I've already mentioned that I have concerns about Jimmy's durability and whether or not he's going to be able to be a consistently good player throughout the rest of the regular season, and whether or not he'll just try and shelve it until the playoffs. We'll have to wait and see as far as that's concerned. But Tyler Hero Also did catch some blame from a lot of Heat Twitter. He did struggle from the field. 2 of 8 overall, 1 of 5 from 3-point range. Finished with 7 rebounds, so if anything, Tyler continues to be an excellent rebounder. He has a knack for getting to the ball. But I don't like him constantly looking to take shots there when that flow of the offense, that intent that Eric Spoelstra keeps talking about, just doesn't always seem to be there. I don't know what the option is. I said it before. I think Tyler should be coming off the bench. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a blow to his self-esteem. He was coming off the bench last year, and he looked just fine. He missed some shots toward the end of the game there that we feel he probably would have hit last season. Like, in looking in the fourth quarter, he took a shot attempt there, pretty wide open, the kind of shot that I think he probably would have hit last season. I don't know if it's the trade rumors. I don't know if it's the change in role as a starter. I don't know if there's something else going on with his overall health. Maybe he's played more basketball over the last year and a half than he ever has in his life in total. He's still 20, though, so I don't think it's necessarily a health thing or a fatigue issue. He does train rather hard, so it might be piling up. Maybe he just needs to take a step back from basketball during the offseason, whenever that does take place. But as far as the trade rumors are concerned, maybe it is taking its toll. Maybe the possibility that Tyler is being discussed and that he knows he's being discussed in a potential trade for James Harden might have been something that kind of impacts his confidence. I don't know. I can only imagine that it is. It's for him, for his family, for his girlfriend, for all those people that are close to Tyler in his personal life, they have to be aware of what's happening. And yes, there is the business of basketball, but there's also the much more human aspect where those trade rumors do make an impact. So I do want to get into some questions about Harden and everybody else that's on the trade block, because it seems like a lot of fans believe Miami needs to make a move right away. So I'll talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible to stock all the parts that your car might need in a traditional chain storefront. So why endure pointless or intimidating questions while the person behind the counter orders the parts that you're looking for on their computer? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years, 2 decades. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks, delivered directly and safely to your door. Why spend more for the exact same parts at a chain store, or even worse, at a car dealership? RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So go to RockAuto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or your truck, and then go to their How Did You Hear About Us section and enter Locked On so they know we sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskHellHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. Duncan Robinson, this is particularly noteworthy. The fastest player to reach 300 made three-pointers in the NBA, doing so in just 95 games. Luka Doncic and Damian Lillard were tied for the lead previously, with the next fewest at 117, a difference of 22 games. So pretty substantial. Just goes to show what a historic season Duncan's been having now. I'll have to add the caveat that, of course, Steph Curry, while obviously a very, very good shooter, was hurt for many of his earlier seasons. So that's why it took him longer to get to this benchmark. It's somewhat also arbitrary because, you know, Steph has hit 300 in a season, and I don't think it took him 95 games to do so. So, you know, it's something to consider. A lot of people who can shoot this well also tend to be more of your bench player or role player, like a Joe Harris, let's say, or a guy who can shoot as well as he does, a Matt Thomas in Toronto. Those kinds of shooters don't really get the kind of playing time or the opportunity to put up as many shots as a Klay Thompson or Steph Curry. Again, another guy like Klay who wasn't getting the ball as often early in his career, so it didn't really matter. I think long-term, you would probably say Klay and Steph are probably better shooters than Duncan, or maybe even comparable. But either way, a hell of a benchmark for him, a hell of an accomplishment. He spoke about it. He said, look, I wish it would have been a winning effort. And I guess it's just something that you can think about towards the end of your career. I don't know. Given the way the NBA has changed so much and the way the game is evolving with three-point shots, it's probably not going to be a record that lasts very long, considering Doncic, you know, achieved that just a couple of years ago, or last season, I guess, when he was in his second year, and already the record's been broken. So we'll see how long it lasts for Duncan. This first question comes in from Darius. who writes in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Hey there, again, trying to become a Heat regular on Twitter, LOL. I asked a question before, you answered it, but now I ask, does this game show how much we need a competent rebounder because the team concept we've had for years is played out, and is it too early for a trade? That second question, one that was echoed by many people, but as far as the rebounding is concerned, you know, no, I don't think it is. I think that's not necessarily archaic. My former co-host had a strong anti-rebound take. He really felt that it was never important for teams to rebound. And I, to a degree, I don't think it is. I think Eric Spoelstra believes it doesn't. It's about connecting on your shots, getting good looks, making stops on defense. I think that's the priority there. Rebounding and the overall impact of rebounding tends to, I think, be one of those statistics where it's been kind of disputed as to whether or not it actually has much impact. It just seems, I don't know why it was viewed as so important. The game of basketball has changed so much. You couldn't win in basketball without a competent big man. It's why people like Wilt and Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Wes Unseld and, you know, so many big-time players, Willis Reed of the New York Knicks, that these guys were such great rebounders, and it just became synonymous with winning basketball. But I think as time has gone on, and wing players, ball handlers, guys like Michael Jordan, et cetera, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, it didn't necessarily feel as important to be able to pull down rebounds. Even when you accomplish a triple-double, it seems somewhat, again, like an arbitrary threat or an arbitrary compilation of statistics. I don't think it's as important, and I don't think Miami necessarily needs a competent rebounder. I'd say overall, you probably, as far as an ideal fit next to Bam, a guy like Kelly makes a lot of sense because he's another playmaker, another stretch big that can shoot from the perimeter and put the ball down, create plays for others and things of that sort. But if Miami's front backcourt was a little bit more settled as far as their overall efficiency and defense, then I think for Miami's sake, you'd probably want to have not a 3-and-D center, but a 3-and-B. That was a term that, well, an associate of mine had once created on Twitter, and he wrote a piece about the 3-and-B center being somebody, a guy who could block shots at the rim but can also stretch the floor. We haven't really had that kind of player yet in the NBA. I think that might be the next evolution, is if you're looking for a 3-and-D wing, why not a 3-and-B wing, a big man, a guy who is, you know, close to 7 feet, maybe a little bit over seven, can block shots and stretch the floor. Maybe a guy like Bol Bol fits that description. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a long-term impactful player. I think Denver likes him. I think Denver fans like him. And I think fans in general like seeing a tall player who can knock down shots and stretch the floor and also block shots at the rim, given the fact that he's 7'5". I'm not sure if that's necessarily going to be a player that gets a lot of playing time because he's still a little undersized and prone to injury and things of that sort. But I think that's the kind of player that's ideally next to Bam, because, again, you just want to be able to space the floor. If Myers is more of a fleet-footed rim protector who could block shots and impact shots at the rim, then I think he'd be getting some more playing time. Unfortunately, he's just somewhat porous because he doesn't leave the ground. He doesn't jump very high. He's not the kind of mobile center that can impact shots at the rim. And if that's the case, then he's basically just out there to stretch the floor. And even then, right now, he's not getting any playing time whatsoever. So it's hard to kind of justify his role on the team, considering he doesn't really have a clear one other than to be somewhat of a glorified cheerleader. Somewhat unfortunate. I hate reducing a NBA player to such small terms, but that's the reality, is that right now he's just not playing a lot. Myers is still obviously a very good individual player. He's just not playing very well for this NBA team in particular. But on to Darius's second question. Is it too early for a trade? OG writes in, do you see any trades happening? And Jordan also chimes in with, why don't we have Harden yet? So clearly every loss is going to be, I think, in the short term, going to give fans the opportunity to ask why a trade hasn't happened yet. I think if a trade's going to happen, well, okay, to Darius's first question, no, it is not too early for a trade. I don't think the team thinks it's just the right time, though. They want to kind of figure out a little bit more about what's going on. They've had Jimmy back in the lineup for 3 games now. They lost the first game. They lost this 3rd game to Boston, but they look pretty good in both games 2 and 3. And so I think now that you have a stable starting lineup, Kelly Olynyk has looked decent. maybe you tweak it. Maybe you put Tyler Hero on the bench again because he does seem to be struggling a little bit offensively. And if that's the case, maybe he's just a better bench player, a guy who can light up second units and things of that sort. I think they're going to wait a little bit longer. I would say probably early February is when they'll start kicking the tires on a couple potential deals. As to Jordan's question, or OG's question, do I see any trades happening? Yes. I think at some point you have to make that change. Not even because this roster is flawed or because they're not necessarily high on the people on this roster right now, but just because the pressure is on this team to deliver a championship to Jimmy Butler. I think that's so important for them, given everything that happened with Dwayne Wade when he was at his peak there in between 2008 and 2010. And while, yes, they were able to give him a couple titles later on during the Big Three era, they would have liked to have prolonged him competing at the high level when he was almost at an MVP type level himself as an individual, but did not have a great team surrounding him. So I've mentioned this before. I think it's an ongoing concern with Jimmy. As for Harden, he's too expensive to acquire. I think they're going to wait it out there in Houston a little bit. I don't think that they have any need to make any change anytime soon. This next question comes in from Jeff. Dragic has had a couple plays where he was slow fighting over a screen and he didn't even crowd the short roll passing lane. He can't leave the bigs that exposed. Now, this is more of a comment than a question, but yes, you're a good point, Jeff. I do think it's worth noting. And at the same time, I don't know that you're going to get anything better out of Dragic at this point in his career. I know he can at least make contact, maybe nudge him a little bit, but sometimes in the league, especially for a player like Dragic, that might lead to an easy foul call. I didn't really notice it being a particularly egregious problem of Goran's, but I mean, it makes sense, though. He can't just leave him rolling like that, and if that's the case, he should be able to at least reach out, make contact, touch a player, and kind of impede their progress somewhat. Josh writes in, is it just me, or does Mo Harkless remind you of Derrick Jones Jr. minus the freak dunking ability? It feels like he needs to have his confidence built up, and without it becomes nearly unplayable. Now, you see, Josh, I hate to disagree with you, but I do. I think, for one, yes, absolutely, the dunking ability non-existent on Mo's end. It's not to say he's not a good athlete. He's just not Derrick Jones Jr., who, you know, is a slam dunk winner and one of the best dunkers in NBA history. As far as Mo's concerned, he's long, he's rangy. He's also a seven-year veteran, and he's already played with a number of teams, from the Knicks to the Magic to the Blazers to the Clippers. Like, he's had opportunities to prove what kind of player he is. With Derek, this was a young player who was in a shitty Phoenix team that was mismanaged with coaches coming in and out, no kind of stability whatsoever, no clearly defined role. He was undersized, young. He was underweight. He really didn't have any good coaching or any practical experience. So not the same thing at all to me. Like, Derrick Jones, yes. I don't know that he necessarily needed his confidence built up. He needed stability. He needed a good system in place, a team with a proven track record of building up and developing players. I think he needed to be coached well, something he had not experienced earlier in his career before he was waived by the Phoenix Suns. And now I think he's a pretty solid overall player, and you know, maybe he has another step to take. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not. In Miami, it didn't seem likely that he was going to get that opportunity, and that's why he joined the Blazers. But as far as Harkless is concerned, no, I don't think it's his confidence. I think he has to know who he is at this point, and if he doesn't, I don't know what the expectation for him was to come here. Now, he probably talked to Myers and said, you know what, what's his team like? You know, I played alongside Myers with the Blazers. I know what he's like. I want to see what this organization is. Maybe this is a good opportunity to have 1 year with a team, have them develop you a little bit and get the very best out of you. It just hasn't worked out. Now, Mo probably would have played today, except he was still out due to not necessarily an injury, but just not quite. His soreness, I think, it was how it was officially listed after he took a big fall in the Oklahoma City Thunder game. So I think that was the concern there. He probably will continue playing moving forward. Whether or not he's going to get any better remains to be seen. It is an issue. I don't think it's a confidence one, though. I think it's just overall talent and not understanding his role on this team right now. So hopefully he'll figure it out. If not, well, I guess we're stuck with him at least for the next 5-6 months. If you want to get basketball smart, however, it starts with listening to the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, part of the Lockdown Podcast Network. NBA analytics pioneer and front office insider John Hollinger joins Dunked On podcast host Nate Duncan to bring you scouting reports, game breakdowns, salary cap analysis, everything you might need. So subscribe to Hollinger and Duncan today, wherever you get podcasts. Remember, you can get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thank you, as always, for your support. Please stay safe out there.